Welcome to the Driving Sustainable Success in Child Welfare podcast, hosted by the Child Welfare Division of the South Carolina Department of Social Services. This is an intentional space for us to talk together, discover together, and grow together. If you have a passion for serving children and strengthening families, then you have come to the right place.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Driving Sustainable Success in Child Welfare podcast. I'm your host, Emily Medeer, Deputy State Director of Child Welfare Services, and we are so happy that you're joining us today for our seventh episode. This space is one that we've created to chat about practice updates and changes that we want to see in child welfare in South Carolina. We talk about practice shifts and culture changes we are seeing or that we want to see, and how we can shape our system to do better for children and families. At SCDSS, we've implemented several strategies to help with recruitment and retention of a quality workforce within child welfare. Things that include revised consistent hiring practices, known as destination retention, improved training for team leaders and supervisory roles, like coach approach to adaptive leadership and the team leader certification training, and improved training for our frontline staff. Our goal is to make child welfare within DSS a place where our staff are proud to work and where they feel that they are valued and supported. Today, we are going to dive into a topic that is part of this strategy to make sure that staff within child welfare feel valued, and that is our Child Welfare Professional Advancement Pathway. While this opportunity for staff to get additional salary compensation for achieving specific metrics and completing specific training has been in place since April 2022, this past summer, we recently relaunched this initiative to encourage more individuals to take advantage of this opportunity. Today, we're going to dive into what the Child Welfare Professional Advancement Pathway is all about. And we're going to talk about the relaunch and what you need to know to take advantage of this special opportunity that is only available for child welfare frontline workers within SCDSS. Joining me for the conversation today are Nikita Harrison and Rachel Hollins. Nikita Harrison is the Child Welfare Operations Director with SCDSS. Ms. Harrison's career with DSS began in 1999 as a Children's Services Supervisor in the Division of Intensive Foster Care and Clinical Services Division. While working with IFCCS from 1999 to 2011, Ms. Harrison held various roles as Supervisor, Program Director, and Regional Director. Ms. Harrison's proven leadership and management experience led her to continued work as the Deputy Director with Anderson County DSS from August 2011 until August 2012, at which time she was promoted to the County Director of Pickens DSS. After 3.5 years as County Director in Pickens, Ms. Harrison was promoted to County Director of Anderson, where she served 1.5 years prior to being promoted to the Regional Director for the Upstate, where she served for 2 years before being promoted to her current role. Ms. Harrison is a graduate of South Carolina State University with a bachelor's degree in business administration, Ohio University with a Master of Health Administration, and Converse College with an education specialist degree in marriage and family therapy. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a licensed marriage and family therapist supervisor. Additionally, Ms. Harrison currently serves on the South Carolina Board of Examiners for the licensure of professional counselors, marriage and family therapist, and psychoeducational specialists. Also joining us today is Rachel Hollins. Rachel Hollins is the program manager of child welfare operations with the South Carolina Department of Social Services. Ms. Hollins' career with DSS began as an intern in 2012 with SCDSS as the Region 2 Adoption Office, now referred to as the Midlands Region Adoptions. Ms. Hollins was Adoption Services case manager from 2012 to 2016. And in 2019, Ms. Hollins returned to SCDSS as the program coordinator for child welfare operations, and in June 2022, became the program manager. Ms. Hollins is a graduate of Columbia College of South Carolina in 2012 with a bachelor's degree in social work, and Mrs. Hollins earned her master's degree in human services from Capella University in 2019. What impressive resumes. Welcome, Nikita and Rachel.
Thank you.
Hello. So the first question that we always ask when we want to get to know our guests a little bit better, beyond just your bios, is what got you into this work of child welfare and what makes you stay?
What got me into this work of child welfare? When I was doing my master's degree, I was able to work at a hospital that had a psychiatric unit. in that unit while doing my internship, I decided that what I was going to school for, which was hospital administration, that I really connected more with the clients than the actual work of running a hospital. And so from there, I couldn't tell my daddy that I wanted to change my major again. But I decided when I came back, my first job that I got was in congregate care. And so been there the last 28 years and have loved it ever since.
Mm, and what a beautiful career you've had of serving other people too.
Yes, that's awesome. I have enjoyed every minute of it.
That's awesome. Rachel?
For me, similar. Started in college. Always knew that I wanted to help people. And so, of course, being a social work major, they force you to pick something. Still undecided, kind of, in terms of, like, I knew I wanted to do social work. I knew that was the path, but I didn't know what that meant for me. And so initially, prior to interning at DSS, I interned at a school. I was in the after school program, but it was very much so education focused. Obviously not what I was going to college for. And so I felt like I didn't have the skills there. And my field supervisor at the time, she was like, well, what if you interned for DSS? Just see if you like it. Because I know from talking with her, she always said, well, I don't know if I can work directly with kids or families. I don't know if that's my calling. And she was like, just see. You know, and so she was actually close with one of the supervisors that was there at the adoptions office, now Midlands Region Adoptions. And so she kind of put me there just to see how I liked it. And I ended up loving it. And then I ended up after internship and I graduated and things like that. I was just working here in Columbia. And I actually got a call from Dawn Barton, who asked me if I was still interested in coming back. Like, oh, yeah, I'll be back. And so I came back. So I've been here for the most part ever since then.
How cool. I love that. So today we're going to talk about the Child Welfare Professional Advancement Pathway. And I'm really excited to talk about this because you both have put a ton of effort into this relaunch that we've been doing over the last couple months to make sure that staff can take advantage of this awesome opportunity that really is just for child welfare staff. So I'm really excited to talk more about it. So let's start with, what is the Child Welfare Professional Advancement Pathway? For someone who's never heard of it, how would you explain it?
So the Child Welfare Advancement Pathway developed as part of a larger plan to increase salaries and increase retention of South Carolina DSS child welfare employees. DSS was afforded the opportunity to look into its hiring process, how we onboard new staff, how we retain staff, providing opportunities for professional growth. And so through that, our child welfare advancement pathway was birthed.
So who's eligible for the child welfare professional advancement pathway?
We have 24 categories that are eligible for this position. We have our intake case manager and intake team leaders. We have our investigation case manager, investigation team leaders, our family preservation case managers and family preservation team leaders, foster care case manager, foster care team leaders, our adoption case managers, and our adoption team leaders, regional support team case managers and regional support team leaders, OHAN investigators and their team leaders, our child and family team meeting facilitators and our child and family team meeting regional team leaders, our placement coordinators and the placement coordinator team leaders, our group care licensing coordinator, the child placement agency licensing coordinator, our family support coordinator, our family support coordinator team leaders, foster family licensing team leaders, foster family licensing case managers. That's 24 positions all under child welfare that are eligible for the child welfare pathway.
Wow, that's so great. So what does it consist of?
As a performance and practice evaluation process, it consists of a competency self-assessment. So as part of the process where a case manager or a team leader, like Nikita said, decides that they want to proceed with the pathway, they actually have to complete a self-assessment of themselves. Self-assessment that they complete is an overview. If they're a case manager, it's 10 of the child welfare competencies. And if they're a team leader, it's 14 of the competencies. And so they do a self-assessment on the indicators of those competencies. So essentially, the process always starts with them rating themselves. For example, one of the competencies is communication. And what they do is they look at those indicators of communication and they decide, hey, do I feel like I'm a 6, a 7, an 8? And, you know, they kind of rate themselves. And depending on how they rate themselves, they will decide, okay, if I could move one step higher, you know, if I could rate myself one, what would I improve? So essentially, it's the idea for them to get an understanding of where they see themselves. It's essentially an idea of them to get a feel for how they feel like they perform as it relates to these competencies and allowing them to rate themselves before they even start all of this. So that way they understand this work directly correlates with how I perform, because it's not just about the salary piece. It's also about the performance and the practice piece, which directly ties into what the competencies are about. Then once they complete that, again, that's like the initiator of the process. So they identify what pathway they choose to select. And there's several pathways that they can choose, but they identify which pathway they want to select and complete the competency self-assessment. And that is the start. So they turn that into their whoever's evaluating them. So if they're a case manager, it would be a team leader. Right. If it's a team leader, it would be whoever that team leader supervisor is. So depending on office structure, that could be a county director, that could be a team coordinator, it could be different people. And so once they initiate the process, then it starts the rest of the process, which consists of competency assessment, a field observation, a case review, a data analysis, and the training, certification, completion, and verification. And so all of the rest of it is a kind of a completion, starting with the competency assessment. So this is the same assessment that they would have done on themselves, but now it's their direct supervisor completing that same assessment on them. And the intention of that is, do each of them sort of feel the same way about how they're performing according to the competency? An individual can rate themselves whatever they choose to rate themselves, but somebody who's directly observing them according to these competencies could say, communication, I don't know. They may choose to rate them differently, but then they too still have to answer the same question. If you didn't necessarily rate this person a 10, maybe you rated them a 6 or 7, what would it take you? Like, what do they need to improve to go up a rating? And so it's the same assessment, just somebody else is completing it to see kind of how they compare.
So it sounds like it'd be a great opportunity for reflective supervision,
yes,
right? To have a conversation about where you think you are, where I mm-hmm. might see you are, and a great opportunity to build that skill set together.
That's correct. That's exactly why it's intended to be that way. So it's the same assessment, just completed by two different people. And so then you have the field observation. So this is where you get into that live practice. And so essentially whoever is observing, they're allowed to observe the action in real time. So they can go out, depending on who it is. So if it's a case manager, they can go out on a visit with them. They can go, maybe it's a child and family team meeting, so they can observe a CFTM. So essentially you're observing this individual utilizing the GPS core practice skills in real time with real clients. And that's the purpose of the field observation. And so they're able to then rate how they performed according to the core practice skills and capture it, take notes or whatever the case may be, and just jot that information down on the observation tool. Case review, similar to the field observation, it's the GPS practice skills now live in our system, because we all know if it's not documented, we all know the rest of that sentence, right? And so
it didn't happen.
So the case review is now a reflection of how you performed according to our GPS in real time in CABS or in our system. How are you documenting? Does your documenting reflect your practice? Are you documenting appropriately, effectively, to where if your team leader was to go into your case and see what was going on, they could have a documentation of how you're performing with the family, with the client, in real time in the system. Data analysis, again, it all goes back to the process in real time. It's not, we intended for the pathway, the process, or this evaluation process, this overall evaluation process, not to be how you're performing in real time according to data, according to documentation, according to real interactions with people. And so the data analysis is similar. So it's now capturing how you perform according to a quantitative standpoint. It's just making sure that things that you are documenting either in the system or what you're uploading into the case file or whatever the case may be, it's just making sure that the data is interpreting how you're performing. So it's all one big puzzle piece that works together, but it's still that real-time practice according to how our system can interpret it. The system can interpret how they're performing from a data standpoint, so quantitatively. Documentation, you have the qualitative piece now, and then you have the actual observation of how they're performing. So it's all practice, all ways in which practice can be observed is part of this process.
So it really is a holistic look of the case manager or whatever role they're in,
right?
All of their practice. And I love how GPS is embedded through every piece of it because it's so central and foundational to that work.
It's all connected, as I say, it's all connected to each other. And so the tools directly reflect the GPS, certain language that's used on the different tools reflects the GPS. So we tried to make sure we put it all together so it wasn't seen as something that was disjointed from the work that we're doing. Like it all works together. And that was the intent. And then the last piece of it, and most important, I guess, especially for professional development and growth, is that training and certification piece, because training does not stop at the academy. It goes beyond those who've been certified for a long time. Even those who preceded the academy continue learning, right? One of the key points about the training and the certification piece is, what training have you completed this year? How are you enhancing your knowledge? What trainings have you taken? As I mentioned earlier, when worker is completing the competency self-assessment, they also have to select which pathway they're going to choose, right? That's why it's called the pathway process. That's where the name comes from. So you have to pick your path. There are 7 pathways that you can choose from, and then some of them depending on your role. So some team leaders can only do, and some case managers can only do.
Okay.
But then some they both can select as an option. So you have training of trainers, AWAKEN. Can do training of trainers specifically for AWAKEN, training of trainers for advanced childhood experiences, and that one is one that only case managers can select as a path. You have CFTM facilitation, which a team leader or a case manager can choose, quality assurance, QA reviewer. You have a coach approach, coach mentor, which is a team leader's only pathway. You have training of trainers coach approach, which is also a team leader's only pathway. And then you have training of trainers, trauma-informed child welfare, which is also team leaders only. And so with these different halves, they also have trainings associated with them. And so in addition to the trainings that you can take just generally, right, like if you just want to enhance your knowledge about a specific task or a specific process, you can take those trainings. But as part of your selection of your chosen pathway, in addition to your competency self-assessment, you also have to make sure that when you're selecting your pathway, that you've completed the trainings associated with your pathway, because some of them have prerequisites that you have to make sure you completed before you even start the process.
Okay. So if I can kind of sum up, I'm going to try and sum up what you said. No, this is great information. So when you're looking at the pathway or you're trying to apply to level up, let's say, so we're looking at a qualitative and a quantitative assessment of where you are in your current role. And then we're also looking for you to grow your skill set in your role.
That's correct.
Yes. That's correct. Cool.
Absolutely. And I think that's, if you see the name Professional Advancement Pathway. So it's a way for our leaders and our case managers to advance in their career.
Yeah, I love that. What are some of the roles within the process? We talked about what the process consists of. What are some of the roles that people hold within the process?
Okay, sure. So there are 4 different roles. So you have the most obvious being the requester, right? So this is the individual that wants to move through the pathway. So this is the person completing the competency self-assessment, selecting their path. They're the first person of the process. And so then you have the assessor. And so the assessor is the person that's completing the task on the requester. You heard me earlier mention the competency assessment, not self-assessment, the competency assessment, the field observation, the case review, the data analysis, and the training and certification completion verification. So this assessor is the one that's completing those tasks on that individual. They're capturing their overview of those processes. So they're the ones that are actually looking at the cases to do the case review, looking at the data, all the things.
So, for instance, if I'm, let's say, a family preservation case manager, if I were the requester, then my team leader would be the assessor.
That's correct.
Yeah. Or if I'm a family preservation team leader, I would be the requester if I'm looking to level up. And then the assessor would be either my team coordinator or my county director,
that's
depending
correct.
On county size.
Okay, that's correct. So it could vary. So for team leaders, that assessor role definitely varies compared to that of a case manager. So the case manager is almost always going to be the team leader, unless there's just an anomaly situation. But for the assessor, though, it could be different people depending on county structure.
Okay.
Right. So then you have the approver, which, like the assessor, could vary depending on the role. But the approver is the one that takes all of those tasks that have been completed. So they're looking at, now going all the way back to the beginning, they're going to look at the competency self-assessment compared to the competency assessment completed by the team leader. They're going to look at that field observation, the case review, the data analysis, and the training certification completion verification. They're going to look at all of those things to determine whether or not this individual should be approved. So that is their role. So the assessor is, as the name says, just assessing, but the approver will now be that next person in the chain of command, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So you use the example of a family preservation case manager. So their assessor would be that family preservation or whomever team leader. Mm-hmm. And then the approver would be the team leader's direct supervisor, which depending on the county size, county structure, that could be a team coordinator, that could be a county director. It just varies depending on how the office is structured. So the approver is always the supervisor of the team, whoever is completing the assessment. The approver may vary depending on the office structure. And then the final person, final role, if you will, in the process is the person that's responsible for final signature. So this is the person that kind of has the last stamp, if you will, on the whole process. So again, depending on the office, it could vary who that individual is. So it could go as high as Nikita, possibly, depending on the offices, because especially for a team leader, because of how certain offices are structured, the highest person could possibly be a Nikita. Or if it's a larger office, so think about your Greenvilles, your Richlands, the offices that are larger that have team coordinators, deputy directors, and county directors, it likely will not get to Nikita's level. It may go as high as a regional director. But essentially, that individual gives that final stamp, and they're also the person that's responsible for getting it to the HRL, human resource liaison. They're the person that provides final signature, so they give that final stamp. They're also responsible for getting it to the human resource liaison, who ultimately puts it into our on-base system, so that way our finance team can review what has been uploaded for that person to get approved.
Okay, so obviously, not everyone gets approved, right? Sometimes you might have people who submit applications who aren't quite ready to level up or haven't met all of the criteria. So what does that look like if they don't get approved at that time?
And I'm glad you asked that, because we did build that into the process, because like you said, that could happen, right? And so the approver, again, they're reviewing all of these documents. So they're reviewing everything that has been completed on this individual. And they can deny an individual from advancing through the pathway. It should be based on the tasks that were completed and kind of what the results were of those things. Now, the individual, the requester, they should be having a conversation with both the requester and the assessor to really explain why this person was denied. So it's not just an outright denial without any sort of explanation. Because again, it's all about professional roles, right? Absolutely. That's the point. And yeah. So you want to make sure that while this person is being denied this time, you want to make sure you're having a conversation, because maybe they won't be denied next time because they know what they need to work on. They know what they need to do. And so it's all about that open communication with that requester so they understand. Now, let's say they have a conversation and the individual, the requester, does not agree. They are able to essentially object to being denied the pathway. And that individual that has that final stamp, so the person responsible for final signature, they can either uphold the decision by the approver or reject it. And so then the denial will stand or it will go through.
Okay. So, but even if you are denied, you can always apply.
That's right.
Just apply the knowledge that you learned from your conversation and you can apply again later.
And we do encourage like a good bit of time, because one of the things that we'll talk about in a moment is about how data factors into the process. Because data does factor into the evaluation process, there's a data analysis that is completed. If you are to apply again, they're still going to be looking at data from 6 months prior to the request. And so let's say, for example, the data analysis is why was factored into the denial process. So you want to allow yourself that bit of growth, that bit of improvement before you apply again, because they're still going to be looking at the same information, right? So you want to make sure you allow your time to improve over time before you make that request. But there is not a time frame or a limitation to when you can make the request, but it's just best if you allow that time for improvements to be made, because the process itself is still not going to be unchanged.
Got it. Okay.
But that's also an opportunity for the assessor to really provide coaching to that requester on the areas that they denied them on. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just you're denied, your data didn't meet it. Like, they really have to focus on the practice. So what is the practice that they're not seeing in that worker that they need to build on? And so really that assessor really working with them and coaching them to good practice, because this is about quality practice. And so it's not just if you meet the, like when we talk about the data stuff, not just about you meeting the data, but really looking at the practice that gets you to like good casework. Because at the end, our families benefit when we do things like with quality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Rachel, you mentioned that the process includes a review of data, that that's one of the quantitative pieces. So talk to me a little bit about why data is a piece that we want to look at.
Data, of course, is a reflection of the work that's being done. It is a quantitative metric, so it is numbers, essentially. Yeah. We factor that in because it does tell a story. We want to make sure that data is not just numbers, right? For the amount of children in foster care, it's not about the number. These are children. These are people's lives that we're talking about. And so we wanted to make sure that the process included that. So, but also that way it was able to tell a story about how this individual was performing. Also, the process includes data from a period of time. It's data from a period of time going back 6 months. So you're able to see the story that has evolved through this individual's caseload, through their unit, if they're a team leader. You're kind of looking at it overall because, again, data is telling a story, right? And so you want to be able to see that story as part of this process. And so while we wanted to make sure that we had a qualitative piece in there, so looking at documentation, doing that field observation and seeing it live, we still want to make sure we also can see how data has captured that work as well.
Yeah. So you really are painting a full picture of the scenario, which I love. You're not just focusing on the numbers, right? You're focusing on the story behind it, but it all together creates the holistic picture of where that case manager, where that team leader, where that professional is at. That's awesome. We've talked a lot about how we're relaunching the professional advancement pathway, right? So it started back in April of 2022, but we wanted to relaunch it. So what's different with the relaunch that's happened over the summer than what was included in the original launch back in April of 2022?
So as we looked at our feedback loops and collecting was the child welfare professional advancement pathway effective, or was there barriers, you know, to staff completing the process? One of the things that stood out to us is that the data elements were not consistent across all program areas, and especially with our foster care and our adoptions. And so in looking at that, like, because foster care and adoptions had about 10 or more that they had to accomplish in order to get to the pathway. And so to be fair, like, we went back, reviewed all of the ones that we actually had data, good data reports to pull from. So, and tried to decrease and make everyone's equal across the board in how many data elements they had to achieve. And so in doing that, we went from like 10 to like 5.
Wow.
For the data metrics.
That's awesome. So it makes it much more achievable for staff.
Yes.
So not only can you, if we have good data reporting, I myself can go pull where I'm at on specific data metrics, but also there are less to attain too.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Also, by reducing the number of data indicators, we also were able to make them more program specific, right? Mm-hmm. So we looked at all the data metrics and we really took into account what is each program area responsible for, and can we highlight those specific metrics versus all of the metrics that we possibly could entail? And then we also wanted to make sure that the data indicators were in the individual's control, right? Because as we know, child welfare is a huge system, and there are different factors and there are different things that go beyond an individual case manager's concern, a team leader's concern, just all the people, right? And so by reducing the data indicators, we also were able to make them very specific and very easy to review because that individual is directly responsible for that data metric. One example, prime example of data indicators are specific. The case manager context is a great example of a data indicator because that work is directly associated with that case manager. They have direct control over that. So you can look at the dictation that's entered. It's very much so that individual entering that information. And then the report for case manager context is looking at that worker's work. We had another data indicator that we ended up removing because it was the number of placements a child had in care. There are various factors that contribute to that. And we wanted to make sure that is, while the case manager has, you know, different responsibilities they have associated with the child's placement, the number of placements a child experienced can go beyond a worker's control. And so we really took the time to look at what is in that individual's control, and then what can, how can we reduce it and make it program area specific.
That's awesome. So the biggest changes are significantly reducing the data indicator. So yes, sometimes cutting them in half, which is huge. Mm-hmm. And then making sure that they're in the worker's control of what they can, and that they have easy access to the data, right, too. So it's something that they can easily see and track for,
right,
themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So our ADR team has done a great job with making sure the ones that are on there, like, we can pull that data.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Diana and her accountability data and research team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if staff have more questions about the professional advancement pathway, where can they go to find more information?
That was a question that came up as part of development, because we really wanted to make sure that the information was available at any time, at any point, can be pulled at any time, can be reviewed as many times as it possibly can. And so we landed on it being on our intranet. So it's on our Unite page. How you access the information is the same way you go to review our policy manual. If you go onto Unite and you select policy manual and reference guides, find, of course, the child welfare manual, obviously. Once you select policy manual and reference guides, you also be able to select child welfare as your program service. So you select child welfare services. In that same folder, you will find the policy manual, the child welfare policy manual. You'll find some FAST and CANS reference guide, but then you will also find a folder that says the child welfare professional advancement pathway. That's what the folder is called. And you can select that folder, and you'll be able to find all of the information that has been housed in that folder since April of 2022. So we've done several recordings and presentations. There's several documents. There's several PowerPoints, various things. And we've created different folders for all of the information that we're constantly uploading, right? But all of the information is on there. It can be reviewed as many times as one would like. You can download the PowerPoints. You can open them up on your computer and all the things. But it is available on Unite. It's not in a place where you have to request access or anything like that. It's easily accessible. So I encourage everybody to, if you haven't looked at it in a while, and we have added a few things to it, and we're constantly adding, like, we use our feedback loops very well, and we keep updating it as many times as we possibly can. But if you haven't checked it out, I definitely encourage folks out there to visit the Unite page and click on that folder and really dive into what's there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I want to echo what Rachel said. If you haven't been there, or you haven't been there recently, go check it out and see all the great information. Also, plug, if you're looking for the timeline of when you can expect your salary increase, it's also in that folder. Yes. So I know that's a question we get a lot. So that timeline is also in that folder too. So mm-hmm. great information in that folder on Unite. If staff have more questions, eligible staff who are mm-hmm. part of this professional advancement pathway, who should they reach out to?
That's a good question, Emily, because while Rachel is the main program manager of the Child Welfare Advancement Pathway, she is not the sole owner of the work. You know, so we created this process with all program areas and within child welfare. And so they all own a piece of it. And so for each program area, there is different people who are assigned to, like, answer questions if you have a question about your particular program area. So if you're under the Permanency Division, Jocelyn Gibson, Casey Wingate, and Dawn Barton are your contacts. Under Safety, that will be Austin Cummins, and Josie Jones and Louise Cooper are your contacts. Under our Family and Community Service and Strategic Projects, that will be Jill Aquino and Lori Burton will be your contacts for the Family and Community Service and Strategic Projects. Training, if you have questions about training, Dr. Shanae Moore and Lou Rogers, if you're looking for him in email, it'll say James Rogers. If you're under Child Welfare Operations, which is county operations, in a county or in an adoptions office, your contact would be Rachel Hollins and myself, Nikita Harrison.
All right. And is that contact list of who their contact is in that Unite folder?
Well, we just updated this because we're actually getting ready to create an email group so that workers will have.
There is an email now. It took a while to get it developed. So all of the people that Nikita just listed are on that email. But it's essentially the Child Welfare Professional Advancement Pathway Q&A at dss.sc.gov. That's the whole email. It's very long. If you type in pathway, it should come up because that's the only email that has pathway in its name, and you'll be able to find that email. And so we created that as a way for sort of gatekeeping all the questions, because we do get a lot of questions from a lot of different people in the eligible positions. And so we were trying to figure out a way to how we can pull in some of those questions about individuals have about their specific salary, specific concerns they have, but also just general feedback. We didn't have a way to sort of pull all of that information in. And so this email that we've now created allows you to put your questions in there, send an email to that inbox, and then the appropriate person will respond given their program area.
Okay, perfect. So you don't have to remember the list of names that Nikita just read off. Right. If you do, that's great. But you also can email the inbox directly, and yep. we'll make sure we include that shared inbox in the notes section for today's podcast so you have access to that. All right. Well, thank you so much for this conversation today, Rachel and Nikita, and for your collective expertise. It's been really informative and really helpful to learn more about Child Welfare Professional Advancement Pathway and how this great opportunity for our eligible staff can take advantage of growing professionally and being recognized monetarily for the great work that they're doing. We hope that all of the eligible staff will look into this more and that you'll take advantage of this awesome opportunity. Thank you to all of our listeners for joining us for another episode of the Driving Sustainable Success in Child Welfare podcast. If you liked what you heard, please like, follow, and subscribe. And until next time, I'm your host, Emily Madier. And remember, you are valued, you are important, and you are making a difference.
Thank you for joining us for the Driving Sustainable Success in Child Welfare podcast, hosted by the South Carolina Department of Social Services. If you liked what you heard, please follow and subscribe to the show. And until next time, remember, policies, mandates, and regulations will come and go. But successful, sustainable change is the result of thoughtful and passionate people collectively striving daily to improve the experiences and outcomes for all.